Thanks for tuning in, everyone. For our latest Artemis Live video interview, I'm delighted to welcome Joe Petrelli, who's well known in the industry as the president and co-founder of rating agency Demotech, and also a co-founder of Forewarning. And we have Todd Kosakowski, CEO, co-founder, and shareholder of Forewarn as well. So welcome, both of you. It's really good to speak with you today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you so much, Steve.
Yes, thank you, Steve.
Good to talk with you today. So, to set the scene a little bit, this is going to be a bit different to our more typical Artemis Live interviews that people are used to. So, we're going to have a presentation today as well. And that's because there's some really important data that I want to get across to our viewers. And Joe and Todd have been working closely together to deliver insights for the insurance and reinsurance industry that have previously, in my opinion, been masked or hidden and very myth lacking in understanding, I think, among the people who really should be keeping an eye on this, as it's extremely pertinent today, this subject. So specifically, they've been undertaking significant work to mine and analyze data that can help insurers and reinsurers better understand some of the causes of the explosive claims litigation trends that have affected the industry today, especially in the United States. Now, Forewarn Inc. is a relatively new venture the pair have established to provide awareness of tech-enabled claims instigation to assist carriers and third parties to remediate that claim instigation. Now, they define tech-enabled claim instigation as the confluence of litigation funding, litigation marketing, litigation financing, and search engine optimization as a way to initiate claims. Now, viewers and listeners to our videos and podcasts will be only too familiar with the claims inflation and loss amplification trends seen in catastrophe events over the last few years, in Florida particularly, but also across other regions too. And the work Joe and Todd have been doing and continue to do sheds light on some of the murky practices that are ramping up claims inflation today. And these are causing issues to insurers and reinsurers, while also contributing to the challenges of insurability that we see today as well. It's very clear that some carriers have been exiting regions that are both catastrophe or climate affected, but importantly, some of the most affected areas seem to be experiencing quite high litigation rates as well. So I'm delighted to hand over to Todd and Joe, and they're going to take us through this presentation, diving into some of their findings and give you some insights into really what they've been uncovering with their work. So, Todd, over to you if you'd like to share your presentation and you guys can get started.
That sounds great. If you could enable me to share, that would be wonderful.
Absolutely. That's my bad. I should have really allowed that before we even got started, shouldn't I? So just bear with me one second while I do that.
That's usually my trick when
There you go, Todd. Now you should be good to go.
Fantastic. And Joe, maybe I'll have you kick us off, and then I'll tail in.
Yep. I think this goes back. Our original research began in March of 2022. We had done a preliminary postmortem on several smaller regional Florida-focused insurers. And we all know that Florida, for a period of time, had disproportionate, disparate personal lines property litigation levels. It was documented by NAIC data. It was documented in studies of the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation. And we did a postmortem of companies that failed in 2021, and they were litigated to death. This is an example of the type of information that we saw subsequent to the insolvencies of the companies you see. St. John's was incorporated in 2004, 2005. We'd been monitoring them on a regular basis for over 20 years. When we looked at them and we looked at the litigation levels, the bottom of the slide shows for the years 2016 through 2021, the new, not cumulative, new calendar year litigations. And they went from a fairly steady state of 180 per year, 2016 and prior, to 569, 1058, 1722, 2340, 3508 in the year that they went down. And when we saw this for each of these companies, we knew that it had to be more than billboards. We knew that it had to be more than door knocking. And we knew that it had to be just an escalation of unprecedented proportions. I'd known Todd Kazakowski for probably 12 years. Todd's an analytics, machine learning, data, technology. He'd been working with internet-based information for probably 25 years. And I contacted him in an email and said, Todd, I need some help. Give me a call. And we set out a research project to figure out how these escalating litigation rates could possibly exist despite the disparate litigation in the state of Florida. It was relatively static over this 2016 to 2021 period. Florida represented 8% of the homeowners' claims in the country, but they represented 75% of the litigation in the country. This never changed, yet each of the companies that went down saw an escalation of new litigation of unprecedented levels. Todd?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. And so as Joe poised the question back about a year and a half ago in Florida, what was starting to cause the instigation? Certainly it was more than billboards, but it was also, as we started to uncover, the use of new digital practices and techniques. And so where I started to turn my attention was to look at how organizations were leveraging digital marketing campaigns and digital tools to engage and find a way to intercept policyholders if they could. And one of the more common practices was the use of SEO, search engine optimization. For those not familiar, search engine optimization is just nothing more than improving the quantity and quality of web traffic to your site from a search engine. And that can take place in the form of organic SEO by creating content using keywords, videos, and such. Another way to do that, of course, is to buy it. You can pay for pay-per-click or certainly create ads, as we've all seen in Google and other search engines, and trying to entice people to click on and move that traffic to their sites. And so as I started to investigate, and I had worked with Google, Microsoft, and several other organizations for several decades, but what caught my attention was a public adjuster in Florida. And certainly this isn't all public adjusters and all law firms. We want to be clear about this. But as we were investigating and looking at opportunistic behavior, we uncovered this first public adjuster. And what you see on the screen is a public adjuster spending and bidding on, if you will, over 1,200 keywords at a clip of about $57,000 per month. So said differently, over the course of a year, this one public adjuster was spending over $650,000 on a marketing campaign in order to entice individuals, policyholders to engage. And I turned to Joe and I said, Joe, what individual, again, we're one individual public adjuster, this isn't a firm, this isn't a company, this is just an individual spending this much money in direct digital pay-per-click advertising. Unless there's a huge pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, there would be no reason to do this. And so clearly we wanted to investigate this further. And what we discovered was this was a very well-organized individual using over 2,500 keywords to entice and engage activity. But said also interestingly was that 29% of the traffic was organic. So if I were, of course, to search for this individual or search for a topic that they were ranking for, I would land there 29 out of 100 times. But said differently, 71 out of 100 times, this traffic is being manufactured. It's traffic that is being bought or clicked through in order to engage behavior. So as we started to investigate this further, investigate this public adjuster, we realized that their campaigns tied so nicely to each of the NOAA-named storms. Each year, NOAA, the government, will issue the names of the category hurricane storms that would be approaching. Many folks, as we discovered, of course, were buying those as keywords, were trying to rank create websites and, of course, activity around those keywords, all with the hope that there would be a storm and all with the hope that they could convert traffic to their respective websites. And this individual certainly played the same role. With each NOAA named storm, there was a pickup in activity over the years. And as you can see, as you move across to the latter years, there was just quite a big surge of activity. Clearly, they found something that was working. Clearly, there was an ROI to this story. And as you look on the right-hand side, this individual was targeting very specific insurance companies. We begin to see the targeting of Omega or Wesco or an Allstate or Travelers. You begin to see behavior, not just within Florida, but national. And you also begin to see targeting of individuals. Again, this public adjuster was based in Florida. They were targeting mobile home insurance homeowners in Louisiana. So crossing state boundaries, all to entice and engage. So as we continued to investigate, we realized this wasn't just one public adjuster, it was many. It wasn't just public adjusters, it was also many different types of law firms, contractors, and many other types. And the question was, is where, how, and why? What was the how are they doing this? How are they enticing? Where is it starting from? Who else is involved in the network? And, you know, has this really gone national? And that was the question that we were faced well over 18 months ago. So as we of course uncovered, and as time began to unfold, we started to realize, and through our data and our analytics and looking at many, many data points, that no one was immune. In fact, this was not a Florida issue. This was a national issue. In fact, it's an international issue. And so you begin to see insurance companies like Cincinnati being targeted, for example, by one law firm using over 90 keywords to try to outrank that insurance company, try to intercept over 10,000 searches per month. And you can see the activity. What's so remarkable is it had been fairly flat over the number of years prior to 21. And then somewhere between the end of 21 and 22, you begin to see that surge. And so this particular group was rather successful in their activity to pursue Cincinnati, or another group focused on Travelers or Hartford. So you begin to see the growth of activity. We also begin to see different techniques. So the idea of cloaking, so where you stuff a web page with key text words that you want search engine bots to crawl through, but you don't want web visitors to be able to see those words. So you stick a picture in front of that. And that's considered kind of a black hat technique. The idea of stuffing keywords and using the same font color as the background of the website, so they get washed away and you can't see them. Another version of cloaking. What caught our attention was the size, scale, and network of the organizations involved and how they were potentially working together. So where as we expanded, we also, of course, started to beef up our analytics and our approaches. Today, we analyze close to 750 million search engine results pages. We have over a trillion different data points that we're leveraging. And you begin to build models to understand the gravity of influence on who's targeting organizations and how they're targeting and what the risk associated with that targeting can be. Where those lines intersect in what we call a topolistics map, that's our version of what we define here, it is an insurance company. This happened to be a client of ours. And you see the five colored dots surrounding that intersection. Those five dots are the threat actors, if you will, the opportunists. Four of which are law firms. One of them is a public adjuster. And then surrounding them in that radial fashion are all of the additional targets that they are also targeting as part of their practice. And you see it's close to 167 additional insurance companies. Some of them are overlapping because some of the opportunists are targeting the same organization. But in many instances, there's well over 100 individual unique companies that are just within this small sphere of targeting. And I think that's the part that makes this so fascinating, is that you begin that not only see how they're targeting the in this case, our client, but you begin to see how they're targeting the rest of the organization and potentially who are they working with and where are they doing the targeting from. So to uncover this and unpack this a little more, what we begin to do is investigate even deeper around those five opportunists. Because each of those five aren't necessarily the same scale or size or focus or strategy. We want to be able to compare apples to apples or apples to oranges. And what we find here are five different players of different sizes. And then within their respective worlds of who they're targeting, who are they highly focused on? What are their kind of top targets? And not surprisingly, you would find, of course, the larger market players like the State Farms and the Geicos. You'll notice in here as well, though, you begin to see other organizations like a FedEx or a UPS or a Walmart. So you begin to see claim instigation and case instigation around some of the other companies across other industries. But what also comes out of this slide that Joe and I have analyzed is every now and then you find one or two companies that are being equally targeted disproportionately compared to some of those larger national organizations like an Allstate or a Walmart. So as you look in the upper top yellow bubble here, you see an organization that's targeting an Allstate, a Walmart, but also a People's Trust, which is a very small organization, about 1/100 the size of a Walmart or Allstate. So what is it about that organization? What weakness has this law firm found that they have decided to pour more money and more engagement on to drive more claim instigation? What is it that they have found that's working? And so we begin to analyze the keywords, the behavior, the web traffic, and also the network of activity to try to begin to understand who they're targeting, what insurance line they might be targeting, what product they might be focused on. You'll also see in the lavender and the purple, same thing. You have a Geico, you've got a couple of others, but notice in the middle, Heritage, which is a organization in Florida. Again, disproportionately targeted relative to the rest of the other targets. Joe, anything you would add here?
I think when we talk, when we look at the disproportionate percentage that a company might have versus the nationals, this is where we realized that litigation funding, litigation marketing, litigation platforms are all part of the strategy with the search engine optimization. Because the reality is, if it used to be in the good old days, before technology, when there was a court case that involved a plaintiff and a defendant, and the insurance company would lose the case, and it was pretty much game over. Now, the litigator can get funding, hire a litigation marketing firm, and say, go find me as many policyholders as you can of XYZ insurance company because they have a bad policy provision. The opportunists know that it's going to take at least a year for a filed correction with the Department of Insurance to address the issue until that gets rolled on to the other policyholders. So they basically know that they have a 12-month window to attack that particular insurer, and they've got the secret sauce and they've got the code. And that's where this disproportionality comes from. That's where the tech-enabled instigation became apparent to us.
What we also will begin to analyze is what we call a target correlation similarity index. So as we work with our clients and organizations to understand who's targeting them, who else are these actors also targeting at the same disproportionate levels? And so we can begin to compare the company that organizations are sharing with in terms of the similarities and strength or in scope of the threat actors against an organization. In this case, we're analyzing over 160 insurance companies that are also equally targeted to varying levels. So why this becomes important, and to give a sense of scale and what's happened in this industry in the last 5, 6, 7 years, is of course the surge, as Joe was mentioning, in litigation funding. But in order to make litigation funding and make a return on the investment, you have to start at the top of the funnel in terms of how do you entice people, how do you engage people to actually file a claim? How do you get their names? How do you get their activity? How do you intercept them? And so one of the things that we always like to talk about is how national consumer brands like McDonald's, Ford, Starbucks, ones that we are all familiar with, these organizations on average will spend about $300,000 in paid SEO in a given month. In a similar context, some of the largest national U.S. law firms are spending almost three times that, almost $860,000, or said differently, between $10 and $12 million per year in the same type of strategy. So this is a major problem, right? They're instigating, they're creating, they have the funding, the budgets, and the dollars. We've uncovered now over 42, 43 national law groups with similar scale. We found over about 150 smaller scale firms, maybe not approaching 10 or 12 million per year, but maybe about half that. And then again, and then an additional several hundred more with some rather large investments. I mean, frankly, when you're above $1 million or more, that's a lot of money to be put towards just one strategy. And this is, of course, just one of several things that we're analyzing as part of this. And so the question then becomes is, you know, how did this get started? Joe's referenced litigation funding, litigation platforms. So we're going to unpack that here as part of this next step.
Yeah, I think, and again, this is an article that was published, the National Law Journal. I think the date on it's November of 2021. We found this article probably early 2022. And I think we saw that explosive level of new litigation that was presented for St. John's. And it was typical of the other companies that went under. The litigation just exploded. And in terms of how this happened, when we found this article, it talks about, I mean, there's the headline, Google-style tech hub driving plaintiff firms' growth. And the primary discussion in this article was with John Morgan, Morgan & Morgan, but other attorneys were interviewed as well, and other platforms. And when we're talking about a litigation platform, we're not talking about a word processor. We really need to think of IBM Watson being trained through machine learning and analytics to be able to beat the chess masters. Because what we have here are living thinking software. And again, it says game changer for plaintiffs' firms. And it talks about in this article that John Morgan says from 2016, when they began to invest in Litify, which was the litigation platform that Reuven Moskowitz brought to John Morgan and said, I'd like to build this platform. They built Litify. It's one of 20 or 25 litigation platforms, but it's a living, thinking, analyzing, machine learning platform. During the period of time, 2016 to 2021, they talk about in this article, their revenues went up 500%. And not coincidentally, their number of litigations went up 500%. For the insurance companies that we worked with, the ones that went down in Florida, we'll see that their litigation, new litigations per year, that's the blue line, is the aggregate for the companies we were working with. They went from under 1,000 new litigations per year to over 8,000 new litigations per year. The green bar that is much lower than the blue bar, that's the entire litigation count for the $12 billion homeowners market in California, which is the fifth largest economy in the world. So litigation levels took off from under 1,000 to over 8,000 in a very brief five-year period. And this had to be automation. And in fact, one of the things that we also discovered, and again, these are concurrent tracks, Arizona, Utah, and the District of Columbia, as we sit today, permit non-attorneys, non-lawyers, to own a law firm as an investment, the same way that we would buy stock in Coca-Cola or we would buy gold, they get to buy a law firm. And the reason for that is because the law firms have become investment vehicles because of litigation funding, litigation marketing, and the confluence of those efforts. In fact, for 2022, published early in 2023, this is from Goldman Sachs and Bloomberg. They're looking at the top five investments that outperformed all other investments. And the number one outperformer, outperforming private equity, real estate, credit, and hedge funds, was litigation funding as an investment. And that this, in large part, explains, I believe, is the proximate cause, social inflation and nuclear verdicts. More and more opportunities to litigate will result in more and more successes. And the litigation funding has established itself as a tremendous investment opportunity. We had a situation in October of 2022 when we presented our research to date to the Southeastern Regulators Association. There was approximately 15 insurance departments from the Southeast. And that's important for two reasons, Steve. Number one is catastrophes help opportunists hide their activity because everyone or most people attribute the claims level to the catastrophe event and the tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of claims. Florida had the other distinction of not only being a catastrophe-prone area, but it had disparate, disproportionate litigation levels, as were documented by the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation. But that confluence of catastrophe-prone companies, departments in the Southeast, when we spoke to them and presented our research, the response from each department was, doesn't appear to be illegal. Commissioner Donlin said the same thing then, but he also added, and when they cross the line, we'll take appropriate action. And the McClenney-Mosley situation in Louisiana was where they crossed the line. And Commissioner Donlin stepped up and took appropriate action. But we'll see, as Todd goes through some of his additional examples, with millions of opportunities created every month and tens of millions on a scaled basis by opportunists, it's all but impossible for them to stay within the lines. And when McClenney-Mosley went outside the lines, they got caught. There are so many millions of opportunities that are being presented every day. The actuary in me finds it hard to believe that everybody stays within the lines on every single one of those. Todd?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. So we've had a chance to take a look from a forensic standpoint about around how we came across this problem, and then, of course, identifying it and quantifying the risk associated with this. What we wanted to do was highlight a couple of examples from one of our clients, which is a large national publicly traded carrier, many know, and just to highlight some of the examples that we're seeing and some of the behavior as you investigate your own organizations and portfolios. So this is a case where we have this large national carrier being targeted by one law group. This is just one law group. They're using over 200 keywords to target them, bid on them. And just to give you a sense, they're also using over 114,000 SEO keywords, right? So good organic structure, trying to find ways to get traffic and push their brand out. What it's also doing, of course, is trying to intercept over 12 million searches per month. And in the process of doing this, they are actively targeting 90 carriers, which is just really remarkable. And so the question we often get is, well, are these organizations even remotely successful? Do they have the right types of conversions? And sure enough, as you can see, 104,000 conversions per month is a lot of activity. Now, we know that not every one of those conversions turns into an engagement, doesn't turn into a claim, doesn't turn into something that gets litigated. But that's a lot of at-bats that you can imagine. And so even if it's just a small fracture of 100,000, that has a profound impact on the historical trend of claims for an organization. What you also see, of course, is just how flat the activity had been for the last decade before 2020. And then you begin to see where there's testing. We see organizations where they test, they begin to see what works, where do they get conversions, and then they begin to put investments into it, an investment strategy to really target and ratchet up the growth around SEO and pay-per-click advertising in this particular example.
And if I may, if we look at 2016 as sort of the defining moment for the development of litigation platforms, whether Litify or another, that's where we begin to see the escalation and the hockey stick in terms of clicks and growth.
Yep. What we often talk about too is you can have all the billboards on the planet to try to create awareness and brand. And we know, of course, a good law firm that's doing that. But at the same time, what worries us and what we see on the digital side is the activity on the left-hand side. And so what we're analyzing here are three law firms, each competing and targeting against that national carrier. And where their Venn diagram intersects in the middle are over 245 keywords that they're using on roughly to rank for about almost just shy of 50,000 searches per month. Collectively across their universe, it's about 750,000 keywords to intercept roughly 76 million searches. And they're not afraid to spend money. In fact, just the opposite. They're very much willing to spend a ton of money. And you can see target areas on personal injury or certainly on insurance. In some cases, $600-$700 per click. We found instances where they're willing to spend well over $1,200 per click, depending on the right match and the right type of engagement case. So they know that they've got the opportunity to convert that and get value to instigate a claim. So the real digital strategy is certainly on the left-hand side to instigate and drive awareness. And they're doing it at a pretty alarming rate. When we did a blind, we call it black box study, where we know nothing about this national firm, but part of the challenge they had was they knew they were getting targeted. They knew that there were different pockets across the United States, but they couldn't really fully understand and quantify the risk. They knew certainly what they were receiving from the claims department and the SIU teams, but they really needed a better way to analyze and begin to unpack what's the size of the threat and frequency. And so as we looked across the United States, we came across three particular regions and zones based on the activity and the data we were reading. And what we found were law firms, each with targeted SEO campaigns and pay-per-click campaigns. But what we were also finding is the use of additional media, for example, the use of YouTube and the use of TikTok and the use of other media sources, all to instigate claims across different channels. So the ability to stuff keywords, if you will, and associations and tags of that insurance company inside a video, even the video may not be specifically about the insurance company, it may be about finding a claim or using a lawyer, but they will associate it with that insurance company. What was also interesting about this pattern across the United States, and by creating these heat maps and geographically, we begin to explore and investigate why is it that there are three or four law firms that also happen to repeat themselves in the same geographic regions. So certainly we see hundreds and hundreds of organizations, but we also found were three or four law firms that seemed like one law firm was focused on personal injury, another one was focused on workers' comp, another one might be focused on P&C, and they repeat that same pattern in each of those three geographic regions. So then the next question is, well, why aren't they, do they not have the discipline across the other fields? And as we investigated on the website, we realized, no, they're fully stocked across all of those different insurance lines. It almost felt to Joe and I that there was some I don't want to call it collusion, but there was some act of representation that they met on a Friday night and they said, okay, we're going to take this, I'll take this, and you take that. And we're going to repeat that across the United States again and again. So we're investigating this on behalf of an SIU group. It is something that has caused alarm for us, but we're seeing patterns, very similar patterns with other practices and other groups. It may involve not just law firms, but certainly adjusters or contractors or other websites and organizations. So over the past year and a half, Joe and I have had the opportunity to meet with a number of organizations, associations. We're so pleased to be here with Steve and the members here today. What we have really focused on trying to understand is how best can we build a response and create a response to help mitigate some of this growing challenge. And it's been the number one, one of the number one questions that we received from a number of the groups that we've engaged with, including the NIAC and helping them with their investigations as well. And so as part of that, as Steve referenced early in the presentation today, we built FOREWARN as the response. And so FOREWARN is a data analytics company focused on identifying where claims instigation, where threats and risks are occurring across geographies. And by understanding those threats and quantifying those threats and looking at the patterns, we can begin to monitor and assess what the real risks are, this new risk. For a lot of the organizations, including reinsurers that we talk to, they're looking across their portfolio and they're realizing there is a new risk in town. And that risk has not traditionally been identified or calculated. And so understanding how to weave that in as part of the analysis and as part of looking at what this means beyond historical claim instigation, but frankly, across the entire operations of an organization, because this is hitting everyone and it's hitting all of the departments that we've found. And so the response is certainly surveillance. We have to have a really good set of eyes and ears across the geographies that we're monitoring. This is digital. This is happening at incredible speeds, as we have found. In the course of just 1 month, the number of different changes of activity that we've uncovered and patterns of how opportunists use not just keywords and SEO and pay-per-click, but actually multiple other streams of media to target claims and to target in ways to engage users, to engage policyholders is really part of what we've had to build and monitor within our patterns. By also then looking at behavior that we see in one part of, say, the United States, say the Northwest, do we begin to see it repeat or see a similar pattern form in the Southeast? And so you begin to see some of those elements from some of the same national law groups where they'll test something in one corner and then apply it somewhere else. You can almost get a time to impact for some of the claims teams that we've been working with. And then ultimately is we've created a new set of risk projections and analyses around what this means. And ultimately, how do we build a better digital moat around our business? And then what can we do to counter target? What are ways that we can protect our business, but also avoid our brands being jeopardized? We've spent so much time in talking with insurance companies. They've spent so much time, money, and effort in establishing and building their brand. And the last thing they want is the very tools to be turned against them and the audience to be turned against them and have their brands jeopardized the way that we've seen. So as we mentioned, we use a lot of different data points, close to a trillion different data points to establish these patterns and analyses as part of this. It includes areas of network topolistics and micro-targeting, how organizations micro-target a particular insurer. And I want to point out too, it's not just the insurance companies that they're targeting. As we said, we're looking at other industries, but just within insurance, as Joe and I have found, they're also potentially targeting even agents and agencies. So there's a potential pattern there too of risk that needs to be analyzed further as part of this vulnerability. We look at where searches and where conversions are happening, of course, from geography standpoint, as well as how does this line up to what organizations are seeing in-house from a claims instigation standpoint. Typically, we'll have a time to impact for what we see digitally to what we will see happened in-house, and we can measure that impact and also quantify that risk as well. And then lastly, again, it's putting a plan in place. So at one point, it's just getting an understanding of the threat map, the geography influence, having a quantifiable score and a historical understanding. On the second point, it's how do we then build a response to this? How can we use this data to evaluate market opportunities that we should or shouldn't be in? We have some organizations that are using the data to recalibrate their business in areas where they know they're high litigation and high risk for those markets. In other cases, it's validating their partners. They've established hundreds of partners over the years. Some of those partners maybe playing on two sides of the equation. So which ones are they? And how do they mitigate the response there? And ultimately, too, how do we educate not just the folks working in claims or SIU, but across the organization, as well as the policyholders? How do we help them avoid falling for some of the tactics? For example, one of the more common tactics that Joe and I have seen is when an opportunist outranks the insurance company for the claims department phone number. So many times we would call these numbers to test and see, and they'd say, hi, we're insurance company XYZ's claims department. And we'll say, yes, but are you company XYZ? And we'll say, well, we're the claims department. We'll say, yes, but are you company XYZ? And then they'll click. And so that pattern of outranking the very branded insurance company's claims department with a doppelganger kind of website, a secondary website, a mimic website, is very common practice. And so being able to find those, to shut them down, to look at behavior and language and the websites to help organizations build a case for a cease and desist or logo infringement, those are the types of things that we're finding quite often.
And I think, if I may, that down at the bottom, we talk about the reduction in claims frequency. I mean, we've always had litigation in the insurance industry. What we're talking about now is the ability to accelerate claims frequency by opportunists. So they've effectively taken claims frequency out of the hands of the insurance company, and the insurance company now is unable to secure an adequate rate because of the claims frequency. And we haven't even discussed the fact that we all know that litigated claims cost more to settle. So the severity part of this, we haven't had a discussion on yet, because the frequency part of it is what's driving that severity. The other thing that Todd mentioned, we'll talk about brand protection. The more famous the brand, the easier it is to intercept messages intended for them, because they're already famous. They're already going to have people online looking for them. It's really a fascinating marketing philosophy that's been introduced here, because the more famous you are, the more subject to attack and to claims instigation you are. And similarly, in terms of downstream risk, not only for the primary company to reduce its frequency and severity, but if you are a reinsurer, you are taking on a new risk now that's well beyond the business plan, the marketing, the base rates, the policy provisions. You need to know whether or not the company you are assuming risk from is contaminated and is a contagion that you're now bringing into your portfolio. It's a fascinating metric that has been around probably 5 to 7 years. And Todd and I were, through his research, were the first one to earth it.
Thank you, guys. That was absolutely fascinating. I didn't want to stop you in the middle of that, because there's so much good information there. Really appreciate it, Todd. Thank you. There's some serious work gone into this. And Joe, obviously your background and your understanding of the way the industry works really has helped to solidify this into something that I think the industry is going to find really compelling, as well as also potentially cautionary tale of what they need to be looking out for very, very rapidly too. It's really fascinating, because it's both hijacking of almost the customer relationship at the point of claims. So trying to intercept those claims inquiries and take them through a more legal route than they perhaps might have gone down had they found a direct connection to their carrier. So that's part of it. But then the frequency side of things is just mind-blowing, to be honest with you. The potential for how this has affected claims frequency in the last few years, as this has suddenly spiked. And I think, Joe, when we discussed doing this a few weeks ago, you said you thought that there's the potential that insurers are just losing control of their frequency and there's no predictability in their claims frequency anymore. And obviously that has significant ramifications as you move down the risk value chain into reinsurance and insurance-linked securities as well, because there you're taking on risk from carriers that are potentially being attacked in this way. And while this is the practices on their own are not illegal, when you put them together with the funding and the tactics being used and the obfuscation of brand and things like that, it's a really nefarious practice that is driving significant additional cost, I think. So I really appreciate you sharing it with us today. Now, perhaps you guys could speak a little bit about how you think this might have manifested, I suppose, through perhaps some of the bigger events we've seen in recent years. Obviously, our audience is very property focused with Artemis. So maybe we could start on the property side. I mean, Joe, do you think, obviously, Irma was an event in Florida where we saw this explosion of claims and litigation as well, and also fraud. Do you think this was potentially beginning to come through then, back in 2017?
I think if you look at the National Law Journal article, it talks about the fact that Reuven Moskowitz helped to develop Litify in 2016. And that was when the process began. So I think if and again, it was their article, not ours, but I think they talked in that article about the fact they met in 2016 and they developed a platform called Litify over the period 2016 to 2021. Their revenues went up 500%. Their caseload went up 500%. And I think in that same article from the National Law Journal, you'll see other litigation platforms talking about, their own evolution. So it looks to me, and we're looking back to say 2016, when litigation became technology focused to a certain extent. And that's when, again, to your point, without control of claim frequency, companies will quickly lose control of rate adequacy. There's no doubt. It's the actuarial formula.
And if that's something we've potentially seen in areas like Florida, if you fast forward to today and we have carriers exiting property insurance in California and seeing their own, and they're all blaming claims and or frequency and inflation and obviously climate change and other factors like that. But do you think there's potentially some driver from the sort of marketing side of things that's potentially helping to increase their claims, and maybe they're getting out while they can before things explode in those regions as well?
If I may, I think that the catastrophes and the climate change related situations mask the underlying technological revolution that's going on in terms of manufacturing or instigating claims. So I think, if you've got flood, if you've got hail, if you've got wind, if you've got wildfire, those are certainly driving that. I think when you look at social inflation, it looks to the frequency and the severity of the new claims. Those new claims, I would respectfully submit, are the technologically instigated claims because we've always had litigation. You think your claim's worth 25,000, I think it's worth 12, and we have to litigate to get it. That always existed. What we did not have before was the platforms, the litigation funding, and the fact that litigation funding has reached the point it has in the United States. The General Accounting Office had a report in December of 2022 or January of 2023 that talked about litigation funding, and it's growing like Topsy, and who's in charge of it is basically what their report discussed. So yes, I think the companies are experiencing this, are paying for it, consumers are paying for it, and it's in the and I think the casualty space, if you will, because those claims manifest themselves over an extended period of time compared to the property claims, we may not be seeing it yet in the data, but we're certainly seeing it in what Todd has unearthed in terms of web traffic aimed at national companies, aimed at the casualty lines of insurance.
Yeah. And I would add to that too, Steve, I think one of the hallmarks from a pure technical historical impact was in May of 2008 when Google announced that it was allowing brand bidding for the first time. So from that point on, advertisers could use third-party trademarks as target keywords. They could provide those trademarks as long as they didn't appear in the ad. you could bid on them. But then, you know, for, of course, the insurance industry is going to be slow to understand how to leverage that technology and how to leverage that approach. And it wasn't really until about 2014, 15 that people started to really pay attention, you know, as you and I had discussed in the past, of using that to drive traffic and using that to drive awareness. And to this day, we still meet large national firms, insurers, who don't even think to, you know, how to better kind of insulate their brand, and the use of paid keywords, but also the use of really strategic SEO. Everyone is focused on the top line growth of using and how to promote and grow their business and their sales, but they also don't figure, they lack the ideas or the thoughts around how to use it from a defensive position as well to protect them from some of the instigation that we're seeing as well. So that hallmark change in Google, you know, has certainly increased the advertising and the revenue. It's been a hockey stick growth for them over the past decade. I don't see that slowing down. And then with the acquisition and the use of YouTube as now the biggest search platform, and the use of video and some of the other media outlets, we're already seeing huge trends in those technologies and trying to review how they're instigating through those platforms on behalf of our clients. It's really remarkable.
Yeah, it is. And as you said, we'd spoken about some of this previously, and some of our viewers and listeners probably won't be aware of how sort of that sort of search marketing can work for a company, that if you find almost the secret sauce in driving people to a website to get leads and it's working for you, and particularly in insurance, if you have a vulnerability in a policy form or something like that, that you're specifically targeting a company or a product, and it's linked to something like a catastrophe or a casualty type risk. Effectively, when you start to throw money at search marketing, it delivers the traffic to your website, which generates the leads, and you can really be quite predictive in how many of those are going to convert into something that has some value for you. So that's probably another reason for the exponential growth here in terms of spend, because you can literally turn this into a machine. And that was back in the day when I used to run search marketing back in a previous career. It was something that you'd begin to ramp up your budget for as soon as you saw successes. But today, with litigation funding behind this as well, that really is going to be fascinating to see how it develops. And I think you're probably right on the casualty side that we may not yet be seeing the full effect of this, but I am beginning to see some rating agency reports and analyst reports where they are beginning to express some concerns about profitability in certain casualty lines as deteriorating. And this is at a time when rates had been increasing. So that's potentially an interesting signal as well.
Absolutely. Well, and we're seeing some of the big carriers pulling out of California for auto, right? And there's reasons, and homeowners as well. So it wouldn't surprise me. What we're already tracking and testing is for those law firms who have received litigation funding, whether through PE firms or so on, are their behaviors different from, say, those that are not funded? And are there nuances that we see in terms of how they target a particular carrier? And there are. Already we're seeing some of the very first analyses of that research and of that analysis. And again, you can imagine how you could instigate claims through SEO and pay per click and other channels as well. So
It's also quite interesting that the insurance industry, particularly when you get onto the sort of specialty and commercial side of things, is a sector where digitalization has been a huge topic over the last five or more years. But a lot of that goes into the back office. And the one thing that tends to suffer is their front-facing brand online on their websites, and companies aren't spending on search and they're not really investing in SEO. And we see this in how we rank versus some of the companies we write about, for example. So I think there's a big job for people to do in protecting their brands better.
You hit the nail right on the head. I'm always amazed how many times we find our clients they'll issue a cease and desist once they learn of the behavior. But learning of the behavior of how their brands, their logos, we found one particular law firm had an amazing video, YouTube video on how to basically litigate, how to win, how to essentially win the settlement, and what to be asking for the settlement. And I think to Joe's point on Litify and some of the other platforms. To me, this is the new age of what I would call litigation moneyball. They have figured out where those stress cracks are. They've figured out how to quantify them and what to ask. And when you have an index of what the judge's decisions and the settlement amounts are of each of those cases, you can then begin to figure out how best to position your case against the insurer and what best to ask for the quickest resolution. And you know, we tend to talk a lot about some of the big nationals. But in our research and our analysis, it's also the regionals. In some cases, we found, and we're working with some of the smallest and some of the oldest insurance companies also in the United States, and they're targeted as well. And in some cases, it's direct targeting, or in other cases, it's just kind of indirect targeting. We found companies where they'll use the same color palette, the font to make it look like the company, and they'll set up a separate website. And with the whole goal of I don't want to call it deceit, but it certainly feels like that. And you know, they're instigating some you know, a portal for, you know, filing your claim. So the activity is there for sure. And I think for insurers, they need to get out in front of this to monitor and protect their brands, figure out where they can do a cease and desist or further in some cases, as we found, like in the case of McClenny Mosley, where there's clear fraud being committed to. So
the worst case scenario for an insurance company is to set the naive, lower than actual claim frequency assumptions in their rates, because you'll never catch up.
Yeah.
You're already behind. If you underestimated your claim frequency, the severity on the litigated claims is going to be another driver. And so you're constantly chasing rate and you're always behind because of the regulatory process. It's really a difficult situation for companies if they don't get ahead of it and acknowledge the fact that claim frequency has changed. There's now an additional claims frequency out there that's what we're calling tech-enabled claims instigation. It's another layer. It has to be addressed. And the response to it is different than your response to underwriting claims frequency. That to me is one of the key things.
Yeah, if I were in a reinsurer today, I would want to know across my portfolio what my level of risk is across that portfolio, and to be able to benchmark it on a continuous basis, quarter over quarter. How is that changing? Is it heating up in one area? Is it, as Joe always points out too, is it a contagion? Is it spreading? Is it because of associations and networks? And you know, everything that we've talked about too. You know, we quantify all of this as part of the, you know, indexable or visible web, right? That's the 4% that, you know, we often talk about. The 90%, of course, is behind company firewalls, and for under obvious reasons, search engines would never get behind that to be able to find or index that. And thankfully, that's good. But when we talk about risk and where the worlds are heading, we talk a lot about cyber risk. You know, certainly what we've seen in the remaining 6% in the dark web, and where you begin to see ransomware and you begin to see data being held hostage and sold in the dark web. You've seen municipalities and hospitals being held. We're already investigating and analyzing in those spaces as well. And you can imagine when you begin to see data being sold around policyholders and such. And so this is where there's clear fraud and there's clear risk and there's clear involvement that's needed with federal agencies to track this down. And I think that's where this world, unfortunately, is heading, right? When I look around the corner, you know, I see what we're seeing here on the visible web. I see what's happening in the dark web. And then in that in-between space, by the way, too, with all the advent of what's going on with AI, as great as it is, there's a lot of automation that's taking place without human involvement. And within that creates risk. And so we've seen situations for some of the large nationals that we work with where you can have a car accident. That car is doctored with AI, right? That car is missing a front end. Well, that car is not missing a front end, but it's been, you know, enhanced to make it look like it's missing a front end. The hood is gone or and such. And then, of course, that person has medical injuries. So then they work with a doctor that is willing to change images for an x-ray or an MRI, right? And so there's a collusion factor that begins to form. That's the world of potential of AI and the risk around AI that we begin to see as well, and that needs to be investigated. And I think, again, that is a factor into the calculus of what we deem as cyber threat. It's more than just going through a firewall and stealing data. There's actually a lot more activity that I think in the last years we haven't paid attention to.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, as you say, it's what's happening today is one thing, but what could happen in the future if the industry doesn't get ahead of this is quite astounding. And it's also interesting that this is a risk that the industry faces today that's being driven by some of these marketing practices and, in a lot of cases, it seems some nefarious actions. But this is the type of thing that normally a reinsurer or an insurer might try to hedge using products, financial products. But in this case, there are no financial products at this stage to hedge this, but they really, it's about preparation and having best practice in place first, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think, Steve, it's a good example. When you look at disaster recovery plans and catastrophe response plans, what we're really saying is within an enterprise risk management program, there should be a tech-enabled claim instigation plan. It's just something else that has to be contended with. And like I say, we're Demotech is not going to sit there and look at companies and say, yeah, you had poor operating results. Therefore we're taking whatever action. We like to dig a little deeper. And this is one of those, efforts where the investigation and research that Todd began 15, 18 months ago has been eye-opening and startling at the same time.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I really, I do think this adds a lot of value for the industry, and I think our viewers will really be appreciate this insight into the work you've been doing. So look, I'm going to wrap things up there and thank you both. So thank you, Todd. Thank you, Joe. Really appreciate you sharing some of your work with us. And I hope our viewers really find this interesting and will reach out. You should have seen the guys' contact details on their slides. So you can contact them if you want to discuss this more. But I have a feeling this is something we're going to find hits the news much more frequently in future, and also hits potentially insurers reporting as well when they begin to realize how much of an impact this sort of thing could be happening on them. So thank you again. Really appreciate you spending some time with me today.
Thank you so much, Steve. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure, Steve. Thank you, sir.